Welcome here to Superpowered Pop with DT and EB, folks. That is Dan Satora, myself, and EB. EB, let him hear your voice. Eric Bunch, what's up, Eric?
How we doing, everybody?
So, Superpowered Pop with DT and EB on superpoweredpop.com. That's powered, superpowered, P-O-W-E-R-E-D, pop.com. You can find us on there in the episode archive. You can also get the downloadable app by going to superpoweredpop.podbean.com, and you could search us in iTunes by looking up Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora. You'll find it there as well. So with all, and we have an RSS feed. So with all that being said, thank you so much for however you're listening in, and thank you our inaugural episode together in this new era of Superpowered Pop with DT and EB, myself, Dan Tortora, and Eric Bunch. We're very, very happy to usher in this new era with you, and I feel so very blessed and honored that in our intro episode together in this new era of Superpowered Pop, that you've already had an immediate positive response and that we've gotten a bunch of listens. So thank you so much for doing that, and we greatly appreciate it. We are recording from here in central New York to people all over the country and all over the world, and of course right here in central and upstate New York, Syracuse region and beyond. So thank you so much for tuning in. Eric, how you been lately?
Oh, no complaints. I'm just kind of hanging out, enjoying this lovely weather that we're having right now. I wish, I'm a little disappointed. I wish I had the opportunity to get over there and actually hang out with you in person, but unfortunately, due to the lovely weather we have here in central New York, stuck here talking to you on the phone.
Yeah, so we are, you know, Eric's in his put together studio there, and I'm in the Superpowered Pop Studios, and we are, you know, what are we, star-crossed lovers that the snow has broken our ways of getting to each other again, I guess. So we're not going to be able to, I don't know if star-crossed lovers is the right thing to say. I was trying to like be Titanic with it and like and show you that there's emotion. But I don't know. What can we say? How about this? I'm Star-Lord, you're Groot, and the ship broke. You know, the Milano has essentially broken into pieces, and you're trying to find me, and I'm trying to find you. So can we say that? Because that's kind of star-crossed in a way. So you're Groot, I'm Star-Lord, and the snow, a.k.a. space, is keeping us from being in the same room for this episode.
I am Groot.
Nice. I love the silence. I was waiting for it, and it's I am Groot. So yeah, very cool. So we're here today, and can we kind of start with that? We're gonna discuss. It has to do with the Guardians of the Galaxy. It has to do with the entire Marvel Universe and the future of the Marvel Universe here on today's episode. But before we get to what exactly that is, how about this theory? And I'm gonna ask you this, Eric, and I wanna talk about it for a little bit. James Gunn, who's responsible for the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, he made the statement that Baby Groot is not the Groot we know. So in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, when we see Groot in full form, you know, going about being a part of this team, the Guardians of the Galaxy, when he sacrifices himself and shields them all as they crash land, you know, where the Nova Corps is on Xandar, when all of that happens, they save a piece of Groot. You see Rocket take a twig, and they get that on the ship, and then we see a new Groot being born. Well, this is the thing. I thought, and I'd love to know what you think, Eric, but and a lot of people thought this. I thought that Groot just, as long as you have some piece of Groot, as long as you have one twig that you can hold on to, he will regenerate himself. Well, James Gunn comes out and says, that's not the case. Groot asexually reproduces. So the Groot that we knew in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 passed away when he sacrificed himself, and that the piece that Rocket saved actually was an asexual reproduction of Groot. So Baby Groot is a totally different Groot. When we all thought it was Groot's second coming, his reincarnation, in actuality, it's not the Groot we know. This is a totally new Groot, and I'm surprised it didn't completely break the internet. But it made people very questionable and very upset. What do you think about the fact that we thought that Groot is Groot, but essentially this is a new Groot, and we find that out well after seeing Volume 2?
Well, to be honest with you, I would have to take the time stone and put it into action here and go back and really try to digest that a little bit more, because to be honest with you, I didn't see a difference between the original Gru and the new Gru. I can appreciate the whole context in which you're specifying that Gru asexually reproduce from that that twig there. Honestly, I can't really comment or speculate on that. Thought it was the same character, but hey, you know, this universe, anything can happen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and James Gunn came out and said it, and it's insane. So we're all thinking that this baby version of Groot is just, you take a piece of Groot, and he goes back to, you know, the infant state and has to grow back up to himself again. And James Gunn says, no, first Groot is dead, baby Groot is his son. So he is ace. It's kind of like with the symbiotes in Marvel with, you know, Venom and Carnage and Toxin. It's asexual reproduction. So here we are thinking Groot is Groot. And essentially, we watched that entire volume 2 not knowing that baby Groot is actually Groot's son. So,
well, I'm really disappointed because I'm going to have to return this pop vinyl I got here on my desk and turn it back in because I thought I was buying Groot from the original Guardians of the Galaxy, but it turns out I have baby Groot here. That it's not the one that I intended to purchase. So
no,
I'm a little saddened by that, unfortunately. It's kind of like, false advertising.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's really sad, and James Gunn waited a while to let us know this. So, I mean, that I guess it makes Groot sacrificing himself in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 even more prominent and, you know, hold more weight and more emotion to it, but... You know, he said, he's like, how can you not tell? He was like, Groot was more like, you know, reserved in this and that. He's like, baby Groot's more about joking around. I was like, I thought both of them had expressions. They joked, they did this, they did that. The wife is not going to have this because she loves Groot. And, you know, I can't, she's going to listen to the show right now because she wasn't looking up this James Gunn thing that came up recently on February 27th is when he officially announced this. The wife's not going to have it. I don't know how I'm going to break it to her, literally. I mean, I don't know if I go get a twig outside and show it to her and say, babe, this is eventually going to turn into Groot, but it's not going to be the one that you knew and loved. I mean, I don't know what to say to my wife. It's kind of like when you buy flowers and they wither away, you got to buy new ones. They look really nice. Or when you get the fish that looks like the other fish, it's not the same. So, I mean, Eric, I'm kind of distraught by this, as you can hear in my voice. I'm a huge Groot fan, and I thought that we were just getting to see Groot regenerate, and that's not the case. So, baby Groot is a totally different Groot, but, I mean, I got to say he's lovable and huggable. I mean, he does, you know, warm the heart. I just don't know how I can wrap my head around the fact that the first Groot is gone. I think I'm gonna have to need some time to digest this thing.
Well, Dan, I'm here for you, buddy. I can assure you that it's gonna be okay. The baby Groot that we've learned to love is definitely gonna be a pivotal character, I'm sure, going through as we proceed here in the Marvel universe. So I'm not too concerned about it. As long as he's entertaining and makes us laugh, I think it's all we can ask for at this point. But hey, you know, it is what it is.
And how about the fact that, you know, we always discuss Guardians of the Galaxy, any Marvel movie, that they don't know how to kill off, you know, prominent characters, the good guys, the protagonists, the heroes. Guardians of the Galaxy has had Volume 1 and Volume 2. They've only had two installments in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they killed off the first Groot in Volume 1, and they killed off Yondu in Volume 2. So, I mean, I would venture to say when everybody's critiquing Marvel, Guardians of the Galaxy is not the same. Everybody's saying, when are the Avengers going to die? When are they going to be threatened? We've had two Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and we've had one death of a protagonist in each movie. So, I mean, for those of you that are saying that Marvel doesn't ever let go of the good guy, in the Guardians, they have twice. And, you know, Yondu became a fan favorite real quick. It's one of my wife's favorite characters, Michael Rooker. I got to meet him and get an autograph, shake his hand, see what's going on, and jet down in Dragon Con Atlanta. So I appreciate your time, Michael, once again. But, you know, that it's just kind of interesting how people critique Marvel for not killing off heroes, yet Guardians of the Galaxy has killed at least one hero each time.
Well, I'm certainly disappointed that Michael Rooker's gone. And I really loved his character in Guardians. And it's really disappointing. Unfortunately, it is what it is. We'll have to work through that. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what the Guardians' input is going into Infinity War and everything that we have on the horizon here. I mean, we've got a lot of content coming out here in the coming months. And in addition to that, you know, I actually, interesting fact, not to change the subject on you, but did you realize that there was almost 10 days of Marvel Cinematic Universe content that's actually been out and published and is available to us today? 10 days worth of content. And that's across all the movies, all the shows. I was actually baffled to find that out.
Yeah, if we go to the list of Marvel movies, and it's interesting that you bring that up in that context to say that there's more than 10 days, almost 2 weeks, if you sat down and just watched them straight on, you know, 2 weeks of Marvel movies to fill up your plate. And if we go down the line here, they were in phases. So phase one was Captain America, the First Avenger. Now, are you saying just movies, or are you including TV shows as well?
This includes all the little one-off series, including and as well as the TV shows, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Luke Cage, Daredevil, everything that's been published, whether it's, you know, been on ABC or Netflix or what have you. So,
okay, yeah, so fair enough. So this is essentially the list, folks, and I'll post this on our Superpowered Pop coverage as well so that you guys could check it out. But essentially, Phase 1, Captain America, the First Avenger, Agent Carter Season 1, Agent Carter Season 2. This is the chronological order of when things happen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and in the Marvel TV Universe bonded together. So in all of the Marvel Universe that we have seen in live action, this is how it all comes together. So whether they came out at this time is not of the essence here. The essence is the chronological order based on time. So phase one was one, Captain America, the First Avenger. Then number two, Agent Carter Season 1. Number three, Agent Carter Season 2. Number four, Agent Carter One Shot on Iron Man 3 DVD. Then Iron Man 2, The Incredible Hulk, which they put as canon into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, despite the fact that it was not a Marvel movie. It was not made by Marvel Studios. Interesting little fact there. Then The Consultant, a one-shot on the Thor DVD. Then A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Thor's Hammer, one-shot on Captain America the First Avenger. Then Thor is number 10. Avengers Assemble is number 11. That's the first one. Item 47 is a one-shot on the Avengers Assemble DVD. So those first 12 are Phase 1. Phase 2 starts with Iron Man 3. That's the 13th in chronological order. 14th, All Hail the King, one-shot on Thor the Dark World. Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episodes 1 through 7 is 15. Then Thor the Dark World. Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episode 8 to 16. So this is not even just seasons of shows. These are seasons split in half with movies in the middle. Then Captain America the Winter Soldier. Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episodes 17 to 22. So the season broken into three parts with two movies in the middle. Then Guardians of the Galaxy, then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, then Daredevil Season 1, then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, Episodes 1 through 10, then Jessica Jones Season 1, then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, Episodes 11 to 19, Avengers Age of Ultron, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, Episodes 20 to 22, Daredevil Season 2, 1 through 4, Luke Cage Season 1, 1 through 4, Daredevil Season 2, 5 through 11, Luke Cage Season 1, 5 through 8, Daredevil Season 2, 12 to 13. This is insane. Oh, pardon me. Daredevil Season 1, or what was I saying? I was saying Daredevil Season 2, pardon me, 1 through 4. Then Luke Cage Season 1. Then part of Daredevil Season 2. Then Luke Cage Season 1. Then Daredevil Season 2, 12 to 13. Then Luke Cage Season 1, Episodes 9 to 13. Then Ant-Man. Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3, 1 through 10. That was all Phase 2. That was massive Phase 2. It was 23 different things. Then Phase 3, which we're currently in, is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3, Episodes 11 to 19, Iron Fist Season 1, Captain America Civil Wars 38, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3, Episodes 20 to 22, then The Defenders Season 1, then The Punisher Season 1, Then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, 1 through 6. Doctor Strange. Thor Ragnarok. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, 7 to 8. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Slingshot Season 1, Episodes 1 through 6. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episodes 9 to 22. Spider-Man Homecoming. Inhumans Season 1. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 5, 1 through 10, allowing for time travel crazy pieces. And 51, The Black Panther. Then you have Runaways, more Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and so on and so forth. Avengers Infinity War, and we go on from there. So that is 1 through 51 in chronological order for phases 1, 2, and 3. And then they said, after Avengers Infinity War, we will essentially set up phase 4. That was a very long-winded statement by me, Mr. Eric Bunch. But for the people playing the home game, there's been 51 things, and then the Runaways fit in there too and all that good stuff, which is on Hulu. I mean, this is insane, because there's the way that they were released, which is hard to remember all 51, and then there's the actual order of all of these. I would love to say I'm speechless, but I think that would be an understatement at this point.
Well, you know, I sit here and I try to digest all this, and I thought my time was limited to begin with, and looking at this, if I want to get caught up on every aspect of the cinematic universe, I might as well just quit my job and just start watching TV, because there's so much content. It's absolutely insane. I'm blown away. But, you know, not to, you know, get off topic here, I'd like to start talking about the Black Panther a little bit, because I know we both just recently saw that,
yep.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on it. What's going on with what are your thoughts here? And maybe we should also, you know, maybe kind of divulge into Dan's personal life and something that he also maybe nicknamed the Black Panther.
Yeah, absolutely. Here on Superpowered Pop with DT and EB, happy to do so. Thanks for listening on SuperpoweredPop.com as well as on Podbean and on iTunes and so on and so forth. We appreciate it very much. So, the Black Panther, I've been waiting years for this movie. I would say 2.5 years was safe. Could have been 3, but at least two and a half years of me hoping that Marvel, because when they pushed it a little bit or did this or did that, I was like, please don't get rid of this movie. I have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for the character that is richer than Tony Stark, has more tech than America, and this crazy story of our reality, but still, I mean, it's crazy because of what we know. It's like Africa, a third world nation, they don't have this, they don't have that. America is so much more advanced, and civilization, and in you know, industrialism, and yada, 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 and all the stuff, and money and whatnot. And then this story of Wakanda, this fictional African nation, they are more advanced than the United States of America. They're more advanced than anybody. They're hiding in plain sight. They have all this tech with the suits. They have this special, mystical, herbal way to become a superhero with the Black Panther. And, I mean, it's just the story is amazing. The actors are amazing. And, yeah, we're going to dive into a lot of stuff. And Eric, I'm going to let you know, take the wheel and kind of, you know, direct where we're going here on topics and whatnot that have to do with the Black Panther. But to answer your question, yes, my black Honda CRV is nicknamed the Black Panther because it is A, black, B, it has silver trim, and if you look at it head on, it looks like the Black Panther's mask, and I do have a Black Panther keychain on my keys. So it's not only the Black Panther vehicle, but I have the Black Panther on the key ring. So, I mean, you know that if I put my car in valet and I say, bring the Black Panther around, they know that that's my car.
Well, that's awesome. I got to say, you know, you've got some creative things that you're always working with here. And coming up with a nickname of the Black Panther for your car, that definitely takes the cake, Dan. So
I choose the best.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, so going forward with the Black Panther, what do you see the future of the franchise being here?
Well, you know,
obviously, we know we're probably going to get them. Well, I think it's already been realized we're going to see them in the upcoming Avengers movie. But beyond that, where do you think we're going to be?
Yeah, you know, we will see him in Infinity War. That is a he will return there. I found it interesting that after these movies, Marvel does this really cool thing saying Iron Man will return. You know, the Avengers will return, this and that. In this one, it said the Black Panther will return in Infinity War. So we don't know what's going to happen after that with the Black Panther. So, you know, the future of it is kind of up in the air. I would love to see a franchise made with the Black Panther. I'd love to see a ride of the Black Panther at Disney. I would be the first person on that. And I would want it to be a first-person thing where I get to feel like I'm the Black Panther and I, like, jump on a moving train and I'm, like, out in the universe and I'm running and I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm fighting on a waterfall, whatever it may be. Bring on Killmonger. Let's make it happen. But, you know, what this movie, for me, I really hope has life and that there's going to be this opportunity for sequels. Monetarily, what this movie has done, it's one of the greatest Marvel movies ever made cinematically. The cinematography, the beauty of it all, I agree with that. Money-wise, one of the greatest openings and greatest, you know, this is one of very few movies to get at least $100 million in its first 2 weekends. First 2 weeks of being open, which is huge, and 2 weekends of being open. So, you know, I think that there is franchise in this. I think that people showed up for the movie, so I thank you. As a Black Panther fan, and knowing that this character is not mainstream, the acting in it was phenomenal. I mean, they found amazing people. You have Lupita Nyong'o, you have Danai Gurira, Michael B. Jordan, obviously one of my favorites of all time, and I'd see him in any movie, is Forrest Whitaker. Angela Bassett was great. Andy Serkis, as much as he plays Ulysses Claw, he was good. T'Chaka, John, you know, to see John Caney again, and that was wonderful. Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, the Black Panther. I mean, I know him from Draft Day, the Kevin Costner movie, where he's Vontae Mack, and, you know, he's been in a bunch of other movies, and obviously he was in the Jackie Robinson movie, 42 and whatnot. So there's so much in this. And when you saw even M'Baku, the character that played M'Baku, Winston Duke, who was somebody I wasn't familiar with, I thought he was great. And, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on. So cast-wise, it was great. Monetarily, it showed up in the box office. The beauty of it and the colors of it and the majesty and the technology. I want to go to Wakanda and I want them to give me something that I can take home and play with. Like, that's what I want. So if you ask me what I think about this franchise, I love it. I'm happy with it. I still think that there's some things that could have been better with the movie, but I'm happy that the Black Panther's finally here. I'm happy that he got his own movie, and I think that this cast is wonderful, and it hurts me in my stomach that we had to say goodbye to some of these characters. So, but as we know, on the spiritual plane, None of these, you know, beautiful, wonderful spirits ever truly go away. So that's a good thing as well.
Absolutely. I got to say, from somebody who wasn't completely invested or really read much of the comic books or what have you, I really thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I thought it was fantastic, as you mentioned, the colors and the overall, you know, premise of the movie. And I just like how, you know, it was awesome how they just played off the whole third world country, but in reality, they were really so much more, they were just so dominant compared to the rest of the world. And that was fantastic. You know, I think it's funny, like, just take, for example, when Captain America first got his shield from Tony's dad, you know, they thought that was, like, the coolest thing ever. That was this big deal, cutting-edge technology, and really, they were barely, you know, scratching the pinnacle of the vibranium there. And what you know, what it ultimately could do in terms of technology and what have you, and I think it's comical, that little correlation of, as you'd mentioned, America thinking they're, you know, the big baddies here, or I shouldn't say baddies, but just the big guy, and nobody can really mess with them, when in reality the Wakandans were really where it's at, and just a really interesting premise overall. I don't know what your background was in terms of the comic books and what have you, but I mean, overall, how'd you feel it translated over to the universe?
Well, you know, the thing is with the Black Panther comics is I didn't grow up reading them. You know, I became a fan of the character, you know, within the past few years, and really just hearing about it, I was just mesmerized. I was very, very intrigued by the notion that, again, Wakanda inside of Africa, you know, this African nation was cut off from the rest of the world and more powerful, has more money, you know, the vibranium and everything that they had, that they have more than everybody else, and they have the technology and the ability to go to war, and it was just something to me about growing up and hearing about Africa and poor Africa and, you know, malaria and AIDS and this and that and the other thing, and we need to save people from Africa, and Africa's a terrible place to live, and, you know, you grow up seeing all these babies that are on television and they're asking you to donate money and this and that. So I, you know, you grow up with thinking Africa is in this horrible state and they need our help. And Wakanda is the opposite. They're in a beautiful state and the world needs their help and the world doesn't even know that they're there. And, you know, so for me personally, I was drawn to the Black Panther because I loved seeing Africa on top, because in anything I've ever learned in a social studies book, Africa's never on top. So to right. see Africa on top, to see this to see, you know, this continent and a country within this continent is bigger than anybody else. It like flip-flopped what you think of real history. And I was just like, yeah, this is a great idea. And I wanted to see it come to life and I wanted to see it happen. And it does help that the Black Panther's costume is awesome. It helps the technology is awesome. And, you know, I was just really drawn to the costume enough for me to create my own 3 years ago. And I thought I pulled it off pretty well because I made mine before you could go out and buy the Black Panther costume. So let's give a little shout out to what I did down in Binghamton, New York, putting that together in my wife's mom's house, making it happen. So, but I mean, I didn't grow up reading the comics, but I fell in love with the notion of Africa is finally here. You know, Wakanda is this place where it's the world's gem. And it's no offense to the United States of America. And obviously I love being here and the freedom of it all and all that comes. But we know that freedom doesn't come free. And we know that freedom is not 100% in the world we live in today. So I think Wakanda, you know, it's a timely movie. It can be a timely movie. At the same time, I think at any time it came out, it would have been a timely movie, unfortunately, because we need to be better as a society. And I just really love the idea that Africa wasn't this poor nation that had their hands, that Wakanda, it wasn't this poor African nation with their hands out saying, somebody, please, somebody come and help us. It was, how can we help you? And that was so cool to see, like, the world just completely flipped the other way. And, you know, I would venture to say that anybody from any African nation can look at this movie and, you know, maybe find some peace, maybe find some inspiration, maybe have that fire inside of them grow, because, you know, as somebody told me from Africa, the parts of Africa you hear are bad on the news are some of the good parts, and they're not necessarily bad. And the ones they tell you are good, there's some bad stuff. He said, the media tells you about Africa, you need to go see it for yourself. And I never forgot that he said that to me.
Well, I'm sure we can all agree that, you know, the media can at times, you know, make things a little bit more convoluted than they are. You know, you'd mentioned that Wakanda was the gem, so to speak, of Africa. And, you know, you say gem, so this might be a good transition to move into a related topic, a gem or a stone, more specifically, Infinity Stones. So, obviously, we have Infinity Wars on the agenda here in the near future.
Yeah.
What's going on? What's on your mind with that movie? What are you looking forward to seeing the most out of that? And, you know, what do you think is going on with all these stones? I mean, there's obviously several of them. Where do you think some of these stones are, and what do we got out there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and it's cool that, you know, you talk about the transition about Wakanda being a gem and the gems, and in the comic book they're the Infinity Gems, and, you know, in the movies they're the Infinity Stones. I love what's coming, and I know that that might sound horrible, but I do. I mean, I'm ready for Thanos. I want to see it, okay? If I'm a superhero, then I got to be ready to fight everything. And, you know, if I'm on this superhero team, I have to know that something's coming, and after that, something else is going to come, and somebody's going to try and knock down the door. You know, that's how it is. In life, we get so scared of, oh my God, who's going to stand in my way? What's going to stand in my way? When we watch these movies and we want to see somebody stand in their way and them to be victorious. So, you know, treat your life like you treat a movie, and get excited for Thanos. Get excited for that big wall that you got to jump over, because you get excited in the theaters to see it, but you hate it in real life. Be excited when something comes up and looks like an insurmountable odd, and know that you're going to beat it. Now, Thanos is pretty darn strong. He is a mad titan. So there's the gods, and he's a titan. I call him like a mini god, so to speak. He's powerful by himself. He dies in the comics. He's brought back to life by Lady Death, and he falls in love with her. And, you know, it's a she. You know, she's a woman in this iteration of Death, and he just falls in love with her and is infatuated by her. She brings him back to life to do her bidding, and she says, "I want you to kill half of the universe. Not the Earth, not the Milky Way galaxy, not our solar system, but everything. Everywhere there's life, snap your fingers, 50% goes away." Well, Thanos is cunning, and Thanos is power hungry, and Thanos has a giant ego. Go read the Infinity Gauntlet, you'll get my drift. And he says, "Death, in order for me to do all these wonderful things you want me to do, I need the Infinity Gauntlet, and I need to put the Infinity Gems, which are now the stones, into this thing. If you allow me to have that power, I will do anything you ask of me, because I love you, and I care, and I'm just drawn to you." So she obliges him, and he essentially outsmarts the incarnation of Death itself, and takes this Infinity Gauntlet, and becomes even more powerful than Death, more powerful than Eternity. It's utter craziness, and you cannot defeat Thanos with the Gauntlet necessarily, unless you outsmart him. You have to let him feed his ego to the point where he kind of loses perspective. That's how you beat him. But when he's on his A game, it's going to be anything but a party for the Avengers. And I said this before, and I mean this with all due respect, and you know that I love the heroes, and I would like to think that in my life, every day I try to be a hero. There's going to have to be a lot of death. Because if you're going to bring Thanos to the big screen, or to any screen, you have to respect the character that you bring to life. And you brought Thanos, and you wanted to make it happen, and you wanted him to connect all of these movies and the 51 things that have happened beforehand, and then some. Well, if he's going to be your connection of everything that you've ever done in your connected universe, you have to respect the character. And this character is all about murder, rage, feeding an ego, making Death excited. And when Death isn't excited, he keeps killing and keeps killing and keeps making suffering a prominent piece. I mean, and it's he is so deadly, he is so villainous, he is so evil, he is so destructive, and the only thing he cares about is pleasing Death, which is a very bad cocktail for the Avengers.
So let's transition into the Infinity Stones here, more specifically. I know that there's been, a number of, obviously the movies have been out, and I think for some of the more casual viewers, they may not even realize that the Infinity Stones were a thing in some of these movies.
Yeah.
Just for example, like the Tesseract from Thor and Captain America, the Avengers, so on and so forth. That was actually one of the Infinity Stones. I believe it was a Space Stone.
Yeah.
Let's get a little bit more into that. What have we seen in the movies up to this point? Fill us in.
We've seen 5 out of 6 Infinity Stones. We saw the Space Stone first. It came in the form of the Tesseract. It was within the hands of this octopus that had, I mean, literally, that's a logo, the skull and octopus. This octopus that had grown out of what was Nazi Germany into Hydra, and the Red Skull had this Tesseract, and we could see that, you know, this was a, you know, it's considered the Space Stone because it can essentially take you anywhere you want to go in space. I mean, you can bring yourself from place to place effortlessly with this stone. The question of where it showed up, and it was in Captain America, the first Avengers when we first saw it, that's, did Red Skull die, or did he fall into this Tesseract, and is he essentially lost in space? Or did Thanos find him in space, and is he going to bring him back to fight these battles, is left to be seen. So, the Space Stone was first, Tesseract, it's blue. Now, the Infinity Gems, which are now the Infinity Stones, are not necessarily the same color in the comic books that they are in the movies, so just make a note of that. Space Stone, Tesseract, blue, Captain America, the first Avengers, where we saw it, Red Skull had it, and obviously, Captain America is trying to save the world and keep it out of the hands of the Red Skull, who looks like he got absorbed into it. The second one is the Reality Stone. These are in the order that we've seen them in the cinematic universe. So we saw the Reality Stone second. It's the Aether, and it is red, and it came in Thor: The Dark World. It is more of a liquidy-looking substance. It kind of looks a little bit like Carnage. What the symbiote would look like when it's attaching itself to Carnage, essentially. And we see it go into Jane Foster, the love interest of Thor, and it, when it goes into its host, it essentially will dismantle, discombobulate its host, and, you know, kind of cause some hell within its host. But Malekith, this, you know, this dark elf that gets his hands on it, what he wants to do is when the nine realms converge on each other and become aligned every 5,000 years, this happens. It's known as the Convergence, and it's in Thor: The Dark World, which is the second in the Thor series. The nine realms are aligning with one another. He wants to release the ether, which will send all matter. It'll convert all matter into dark matter, essentially sending all nine realms and life everywhere as we know it into chaos and into darkness. So, you know, one of those, let's kill everybody, and for some reason, it'll make you happy because you'll still be alive, but there'll be death everywhere. Something about villains that like to kill everything and anything except for themselves, and then you got nobody to talk to, or as they would say in the movie Couples Retreat, nobody to go to Applebee's with. Number three, yeah. And did you see Couples Retreat?
Oh, yeah.
You got to have somebody to go to Applebee's with.
What do they play, Guitar Hero in that at one point?
They do play Guitar, which is a fantastic game. And for the games that I do play, I can hold my own with Guitar Hero, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, well we're going to have to jam out here soon.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that.
I'll give you a run for your money.
And speaking of music, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, that is where we see the third Infinity Stone show up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The Power Stone shows up in the orb, that little silver ball that we know that Star-Lord has, and it is purple in this movie. And this is the thing that kind of that breaks apart. You know, the Collector has all this stuff, essentially, and his minion that works for him, she decides that she wants to hold on to the Power Stone because she doesn't want to be under his rule anymore. It rips her to shreds and also rips apart his entire collection. And remember, he was supposed to have the Aether, too. So we don't know where the Aether is at that point as well. Once everything goes to shreds there, the Power Stone is put into Ronan the Accuser's staff. He tries to bring it to Xandar in order to cleanse Xandar of the Nova Corps and everybody there because he's very upset and he's an angry little boy in a grown man's body. And essentially, Star-Lord has a dance-off with Ronan the Accuser, and all he was essentially doing was buying himself time so Rocket could create a weapon to shoot, to break apart the staff, and the Power Stone is free in the air. Star-Lord catches it while Ronan is going for it, and then the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy bond together after Groot has passed away. We have Drax the Destroyer, as well as Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon, all connected in this, and Gamora that are holding on to the Power Stone. And this is where we kind of see that, you know, Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, is not human because he was able to hold on to this thing, and they were able to help him out as well. So the Guardians decide to you know, give up this stone as well, and that's, you know, that's kind of an issue moving forward is, you know, you give it up. Where is it truly right now? Is it in the right hands? So we know that the Collector, who is played by Benicio Del Toro, is hungry to get all of the Infinity Stones, and you wonder why. Now, the fourth stone that we see in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the Mind Stone. It's inside of Loki's scepter, and this scepter is involved in Avengers, and we actually see this one come out in the first Avengers movie, Avengers Assemble, and it looks blue. So we're thinking, and if you're like me that got confused, the Tesseract is blue, and the scepter is blue, so you think that it's the same power. It's not. And we find out after Loki uses the scepter and puts it on the heart of different people and is able to turn them, turn Hawkeye, turn the doctor that worked with Thor in to do his bidding, we know that this works in favor of, you know, obviously taking over your mind and making you a loyal subject, a slave of the person that is wielding the Mind Stone. Well, Thanos gives Loki the scepter in Avengers Assemble. Eventually, Ultron breaks the scepter and, you know, makes a comment about, you know, humans not knowing that there's an Infinity Stone in here. How could you not know this? He breaks it, and we see this yellow gem, this yellow stone come out of it, and he places it into Vision, who is supposed to be what he takes himself in his consciousness and puts it into. So Ultron is supposed to become Vision, which is a better version of himself, the more perfect version, and he never gets to that point. Vision becomes his own, and he has this Mind Stone right indented in his forehead, that yellow stone, and that is where it will be in Avengers Infinity War when we start off. And then finally, out of the six stones, we've seen five. The fifth one is the Time Stone. It's inside of the Eye of Agamotto, and it is worn by Doctor Strange. It is green. It is used to make Dormammu the slave of Doctor Strange until Doctor Strange has a deal with him and is able to barter with Dormammu and say, if you don't want to be my slave anymore, leave Earth and never come back here and never bother my planet again. And, you know, we know that it can turn back time and make an infinite loop. So if you die, you essentially never have to die. And that's what happened with Doctor Strange and Dormammu. He puts the Eye of Agamotto down in the, you know, in the safekeeping of the mystic arts and whatnot. And him and Wong are there. And Wong says to him, you know, it's, you know, that there's an infinity. He said it's not quite smart to walk through the streets wearing an Infinity Stone. And Doctor Strange has no idea what he's talking about. And he's like, with all the books you've read, you still don't know what that is. And he said, you know, once you understand its power, you can wear it again. And then there's the statement that there is this notion that the Ancient One has seen that the Earth is going to find its demise and nobody's going to be able to stop it. And then Doctor Strange says, we will. And still not knowing the full power of the Time Stone inside of the Eye of Agamotto. So where that is, and if that has safekeeping, if Doctor Strange grabs it once things start to happen, is left to be seen. But we know he'll be in Avengers Infinity War, and we know that he's used it before and that it has tremendous power. It's just where they go from here with it. And if that finds its way to Thanos sooner than later. The final stone, number six, is the Soul Stone. We have not seen it.
Let me interrupt you right there, Dan, and I'll stop you before we go any further with the Soul Stone. We know there's a lot of theories flying around out there, and I know one theory that I was particularly fond of, and it was the idea of the Soul Stone being trapped in Wakanda. Now, obviously, possibly crash landing with a meteorite that came with the vibranium hundreds of thousands of years ago. That was my theory, and also taking it into the context of something else I read up on, also giving the Wakandans, specifically the Black Panther, the king, the ability to cross over into that soul world where they saw the past kings or past Black Panthers. So that was my concept. What's your theory, and what's your understanding of exactly what the Soul Stone does? And you give us a little feedback on that side of the equation.
Yeah, you know, for me, I think that the Soul Stone is actually somewhere else. I'm going to play a little clip here and see if those of you listening know where this is from, and then I will describe exactly where it's from in just a moment.
High Priestess, the Council is waiting.
They are perturbed. I've wasted our resources. When they see what I have created here, their wrath will dissipate.
It's a new type of birthing pod, man?
That, my child, is the next step in our evolution. More powerful, more beautiful, more capable of destroying the guardians of the galaxy. I think I shall call him Adam.
So this scene is a post-credit scene from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and it has to do with the Sovereign. Now, the Sovereign, as we know, were very upset with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They were asked to, you know, in the beginning of the movie, the Guardians are supposed to protect these batteries of this crazy, weird fish tentacle-looking teeth monster who wants to, you know, eat these batteries. And the Sovereign says, you know, can you protect them for us? Can you make sure that you know, this thing isn't successful in eating what it wants to eat because they mean something to us? If you do, we'll pay you. So, of course, the Guardians take on the job, and they're able to do it. And Rocket steals some of the batteries. He lets Drax know, and they don't tell anybody. So they go to the Sovereign. They get paid. They leave. They find out that the batteries are stolen. The Sovereign sends a fleet after the Guardians of the Galaxy. They try to kill the Guardians of the Galaxy. They are unsuccessful because Ego, the living planet, who at the time, Peter Quill, Star-Lord, does not know is his father, he comes, saves the day, wipes them all out, and they're able to jump and get to where they need to go to, and so on and so forth. Well, the Sovereign and their female leader doesn't seem to take to losing very easily. They're supposed to be, like, they're not human, they're golden, they look like walking Emmy Awards, and they're essentially supposed to be this more evolved, more beautiful, more perfect. Just think about when people talk about toying with genetics, and when somebody becomes pregnant, able to go in there and create the baby the way you want it, and to inject the baby with this, that, and the other. That, I mean, essentially, this is what they're doing. They're creating life, and at the end of this, she has a giant birthing pod that's supposed to be for someone named Adam. Now, Adam Warlock, in the comic books, is goldish in hue. That's his color. So is the Sovereign. They talk about creating life and using resources and how, you know, the Sovereign makes life. They have all these birthing pods that are all around this kind of queen bee woman in this giant room, this giant library of bodies. So we see all these people. They look similar. There's birthing pods everywhere. They talk about creating life. They talk about using resources. So I say to myself, you're going to make someone who's gold, who in the comic books has control of the Soul Stone, the Soul Gem they call it in the comics, has control of the Soul Gem, is the keeper of the Soul World, and can help souls cross back into life that have passed on, and he can flow back and forth in and out of being in the soul world and not being, you know, on Earth or living, so to speak, anymore, and then put himself in a body and be living again. So the keeper of the Soul Gem in the comic books, the one that can go back and forth, is going to be golden color and created by the Sovereign, who talk about creating life all the time. So I'm starting to think you create life, so you put a soul in it. How can you create life on a whim? What type of power do you have to create life itself? So then the soul comes into mind, this crazy power that, you know, we as human beings don't understand, that's inside of us, that we believe is there. And then on top of all of that, if you look at the birthing pod, there's four different circular areas. The one at the top looks like tremendous power, and the one at the bottom has a dot in it that if you zoom in, kind of looks like there's an infinity stone powering this thing. So that's my multi-layered approach to telling the world, you've all had theories, and a lot of you have piggybacked on theories, but my theory is that the Soul Stone is with the Sovereign, and it's going to be with Adam Warlock from the beginning, or it will at least be made to create him just like it was made to create the rest of the Sovereign.
Well, I think it goes without saying that your theory holds a lot more contextual evidence that could plausibly lead to that being a reality. I think mine is definitely an easier explanation for what could possibly be where the Soul Stone is, but I can appreciate yours. That's definitely a pretty in-depth theory you've got drawn up there.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I took some time with this thing, and I haven't really seen prognosticators discuss that. So, you know, I something that I see. If I'm the only one, awesome. And if I'm right, cool. If other people jump on board or somebody else said it that I haven't seen, but most of the theories that I see is Black Panther. It's got to be in the Black Panther. It's got to be here. It's got to be there. It's probably with Thor. I don't see it. I'm going to stick with my theory with the fact that it's with the Sovereign. And we're going to find out very soon because Thanos is looking for it. And you can't have the gauntlet all set and ready to go without all six gems, hashtag stone, infinity stones now. So whatever you want to call them, stones or gems, Thanos needs every single one of them to make this thing happen. And I'm really excited about seeing him put the gauntlet together, that it gives me chills. And at the same time, I'm really kind of concerned for the Avengers because I look at Hulk and I'm like, okay, he's got something to offer. I look at Scarlet Witch and she was created by one of the Infinity Stones. So there's that. I look at Vision, but we know that Vision's having that stone like kind of look like it's getting pulled out of his forehead in the trailer. So, you know, I'm looking at the ones connected with the stones to know their true power. So I'm sure Vision's got a leg up. I'm sure Scarlet Witch has a leg up. The Hulk has a leg up most of the time. Thor has a leg up knowing that, you know, that Mjolnir that he had, that, you know, the Thor's hammer, that, you know, he thought that was his power and that's what he needed to defeat everybody. And then he's told by Odin, yeah, guess what? You don't need it. You know, that was you know, Mjolnir, this hammer that you have that I gave you is to kind of center your power and put it into here and almost dampen your power a little bit to give you tremendous power, but to make sure that it's not over the top. It almost held him at like a level, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 and out of 10. And we see Thor without the hammer and he's just got lightning running through his veins. It's in his eyes. So Thor is another worthy foe for this. I mean, I'm excited. I really am. And, you know, Doctor Strange with the mystical arts, he's another worthy opponent. But there's ones like Black Widow and Hawkeye and Iron Man and Captain America that really don't stand any match for Thanos.
Yeah, those guys
so
are definitely head-scratchers. And, you know, it's funny. I think Hulk, I think Bruce Banner, I think is going to be ultimately one of the main pivotal deciding characters in the demise of Thanos. And again, going back to what you had mentioned earlier, hopefully they don't remove Thanos from the Marvel Cinematic picture too soon. Obviously, he's a very powerful character, and that would be really disappointing. I think we're going to at least see him for two movies based on what we've seen. But yeah, I mean, the Hulk, I definitely would have to say, I mean, obviously the Hulk is a character that you can, I mean, you can't really destroy him. You just kind of can only hope to contain him. So that, in addition to the fact that, you know, Banner, you know, he might play a more pivotal role in this, more so than the Hulk, especially when you start digesting the fact that, you know, Banner really has the ability to, how do you want to say, use his mind as a weapon in the context of, you know, Thanos might become a little bit more emotionally invested in the circumstances at hand, whereas Banner might be able to, you know, being who he is and being able to truly harness the Hulk or control the Hulk, Banner might actually have a leg up on Thanos, if you kind of get my gist of where I'm going with that.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you know, Bruce and the Hulk in Thor Ragnarok, the third installment of Thor, you know, they're starting to blend, and we're seeing Hulk with the ability to, you know, speak and hold a conversation with somebody, which I find really interesting and kind of, you know, seeing where they go from here and how they connect from here. So, you know, it is going to be interesting to see where things go. We know that Tony had a dream and he had a vision. And, you know, when when Scarlet Witch is playing with everybody's minds in Avengers Age of Ultron, when she's helping Ultron before she becomes an Avenger, we know that Tony is having to grapple with this vision of the fact that, you know, there's all these people out in space that are dead, and Captain America grabs him and he's not dead yet. And he says, "You could have saved us, Tony. You could have saved us all." And we see that at the beginning of this, where Tony's just really having some issues. And then we see that, you know, Bruce Banner has fallen into the Sanctum Sanctorum where Doctor Strange is in New York. And this is actually from the comic books where Silver Surfer falls, completely distraught, having known that something horrifying is coming and that it's Thanos, and that he doesn't know if we're going to be able to survive what's going to happen. You know, then we see Vision and Scarlet Witch are having this relationship. We know that Black Widow's changed her hair color, and they're trying to just come to terms with the fact of, you know, how does, and it's funny because I'm saying all these like big things, and then the next thing is the Black Widow doesn't have red hair anymore. She has blonde hair and it's cut. But, you know, there's this thing of the notion that they're supposed to be able to protect the world from these threats that the world can't face without them. And now the question is, well, can they face these? We also see in this that Spider-Man in Spider-Man Homecoming, Tom Holland's iteration of the character, the third coming of Spider-Man, after Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, and now Tom Holland is supposed to be canon, and he's the only Spider-Man that ever existed. We never saw his spider sense in Spider-Man Homecoming, because he's growing, remember? He's in high school, he's a young boy, he's like 16 or whatever, and we see him with his hair go up when he's on the bus, and he looks outside, and he sees this ring, which obviously has to do with Thanos, we're thinking here, and all that. So he knows that something's coming, so he starts to realize his spider sense. We know that the Tesseract is in the hands of Loki, and Loki in Thor Ragnarok sees the Tesseract and is kind of looming over it in that, so he could have easily stolen it there. I know some people have said that. We know that Thanos can go through portals and end up wherever he wants to. So the notion of the first time we see him in the trailer when he comes through a portal is that he essentially has the Space Stone already. And then we know that Spider-Man's wearing the Iron Spider suit. We know Thor is trying to shut something down, and he's very powerful because he's kind of standing in the middle of this giant, you know, multi-circular object, and he's trying to stop it. And then we know that Chadwick Boseman, who plays T'Challa, the Black Panther, we know that they have the Winter Soldier, and then we also know that they have Cap, who's probably gone into hiding, doesn't have his shield anymore, threw down the vibranium because the shield was given to him from Tony Stark's father, Howard, and it looks like nobody knows, except for the Black Panther, that Cap has been hiding there, because as soon as Scarlet Witch sees him, she's like she looks extremely relieved and kind of like, oh my god, he's here. The Hulkbuster is back, and we know that there's these venomous alien-looking creatures that are fighting in Wakanda. We know that there's a lot of things happening and a lot of, you know, moments of getting beat up. We also know that somebody is trying to pry this thing out of Vision. And we know that Thanos gets two of the stones. We see him get the blue stone and the purple stone. And, you know, we go back to our conversation. That means that we know Thanos in Avengers Infinity War will at least have the space stone, which is blue from the Tesseract. And we know that he'll have the power stone, which comes from the orb, and it's the purple stone. So we know he has at least those two in the Infinity Gauntlet. Those are the only two that we see in the Infinity Gauntlet. We know that Wakanda's getting set for this battle, and we know that they're getting helped by the likes of the Falcon, by Captain America, by Black Widow, And we know that's War Machine is also involved. We know the Winter Soldier is involved. And, you know, the protectors of Wakanda as a whole. And then we know the Hulk is protecting as well. So some big type of battle is going down in Wakanda. And we're going to have to find out how that happens and why that happens and why it's going on where it's going on. But, you know, and we also know that Thor, with one eye, meets the Guardians of the Galaxy. And when he sees them, it's obviously Drax, it's Rocket, it's Baby Groot, who's now a teenager, it's Gamora, Star-Lord, and Mantis, who has now joined the Guardians after fleeing from Ego, the Living Planet. And that's how that trailer ends. So we see a lot in this, Eric. And, you know, it brings up some questions. The one thing we know is that the Infinity Gauntlet has two stones on it, and there is an ocean. And I kind of would be intrigued by this, that the Infinity Gauntlet will not be completely equipped with all six stones until the next Avengers movie. And so this one's called Avengers Infinity War. There's a notion that maybe they call the next one Avengers Infinity Gauntlet, because I don't know if Thanos is going to get all the stones, or maybe he gets them at the end of the movie, but Adam Warlock's got to play into this somehow. He's been brought up twice in both Guardians movies. And at the same time, you know, it's, are we going to see Thanos with every single Infinity Stone, or is this thing not going to be all together until Avengers 4, which is another interesting kind of speculation on things.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. What do we think the Infinity Gauntlet's made of? Do you think it's vibranium? What do we think here?
Well, the Infinity Gauntlet, if we go back, I mean, it's a golden piece, and, you know, it's something that there's a notion that there's not just one, but that there's two in the universe. So there's that notion as well. It's been wielded by the Black Panther. You know, there's been people in history that have wielded it. Nebula, who's the estranged daughter of Thanos and the stepsister of Gamora, she wields it as well in the Infinity Gauntlet. But if we look at the history of it, it was designed to hold six of the, they were called the Soul Gems. So here's kind of the history. The gems were called the Soul Gems. Then they became known as the Infinity Gems. Now they're the Infinity Stones, and one of them is a Soul Stone. So we look at the Gauntlet, and, you know, we've seen that it's been owned by Thanos, Adam Warlock, Magus, who is the negative version of Adam Warlock that comes out of him, Mr. Fantastic, Iron Man, Black Panther, a bunch of different characters in the Marvel Universe have had this ability, and, you know, this Infinity Gauntlet and everything that it gives to them. So it's just kind of interesting on what it is. It's if we look at it and what it can be, it's an extremely powerful tool. It has essentially, when we look at the universe and how everything was created, there was this tremendous power, and it was broken into six stones and separated and all put in a different place so that nobody could have this tremendous power that is, you know, the power to create or destroy everything. And as long as you have the gauntlet and you have all the stones working in your favor inside of this gauntlet, you can do whatever you want to do with the world. You can create and uncreate and create and uncreate and do it all over again. So, you know, this is not
snap your fingers.
And literally, in the Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos snaps his fingers and 50% of the entire universe is eradicated from existence. I'll leave you with that little nugget. So,
certainly looking forward to seeing how this all plays out. And as you had put earlier, it's definitely going to be interesting to see exactly how much unfortunate death we may see of some of the beloved characters here going forward. But that being said, all these stones do give the ability to plausibly bring some of these guys back. So who knows? We'll see what happens. Definitely going to be interesting.
Yep, and that's the whole notion, too, and I'm happy that people are writing this. If Infinity War follows the comics, it's going to be a bloodbath. So, you know, there's the notion of all of this, you know, and the notion Captain America is supposed to be dead already in the comics. Loki, to get himself killed. And, you know, we look at, you know, Vision and kind of the demise of Vision. Drax is supposed to go in this thing. There's a lot of death that's supposed to be happening. So, you know, we shall see how Marvel decides to handle this with their Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, like you said, anything that is done can be undone. So, essentially, it's like a soap opera. No character truly ever has to die. But in the same respect, in the comics, Thanos is brought back from the dead to wield the Infinity Gauntlet. So he's already been dead. And nobody knows that because many don't know who Thanos is in this Marvel Cinematic Universe as of yet. So I'm excited.
Well, let's just remember, this is going to be a Disney movie. Oh, it already is a Disney movie, but you know Disney's cardinal rule.
Don't kill anybody ever.
So. Yeah, pretty much. Unfortunately, they're going to have to break that rule.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, for those that are worried about, oh my gosh, 20th Century Fox, if this deal goes through with Marvel, because we're said that it has, but there's a lot of paperwork and monopolies, and if the FBI, if the government gets involved, federal government, all that good stuff. So if this deal goes through, people are worried about Deadpool, and I would just bring you to Exhibit A, which is Marvel's The Punisher that was on Netflix. If you're worried about Disney and Marvel under Disney not going dark with a character, do me a favor and watch 13 episodes of The Punisher. And after season one, you let me know if you think that Disney is willing to go a little bit dark, because they did. And if you watch The Punisher, that gives an argument that Deadpool is going to be okay. Movie-wise, though, as far as the Avengers go, they don't like to kill off any of these because they're all moneymakers, but I'm telling you, and I've said this before, it's kind of like my tagline for Avengers Infinity War. It's Avengers Infinity War, quote, murder's coming. If people aren't dying in this thing, it's not going to hold up to any type of truth to the comic books, and that's going to cause the really, you know, supportive fans, the ones that bring this thing to life. I love when people say they're the 1%, we're the 1%ers. You know, oh, if you're a fan of the comic books, you're a 1%er. Really? Then why do comic book movies flop when they don't hold to the story? Why is DC constantly struggling? If we're 1% and there's 99% people who just want to be entertained and that's it, how come when a movie doesn't add up to what it's supposed to be in the source material, does it flop? I would venture to say that there's a lot more than 1% making up this thing. And if you want to make those happy that actually know the story, Thanos, I'm sorry. I love these Marvel characters, but he's gonna have to prove to you that he is one of the baddest in the biz. And in order to do that, he's gonna have to leave a trail of tears. And I fully expect that if you make this movie right, there's gonna be people crying throughout this movie. If they do it the Disney way and it's poppy and it's safe, you're going to see people walking out of this movie.
Well, all I can say is if this 20th Century Fox deal goes through with Disney, or and they get all that stuff taken care of, I'm really looking forward to the plausible contextual circumstance in which Charles Xavier could get his hands on the Mind Stone. And that would be interesting. But I'm sure they'll have a lot more interesting ideas developing, you know, as time continues and we see more of the stuff with Disney and 21st Century Fox, you know, starts to materialize. So we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting to see how it all develops.
Absolutely. And if we have any issue with time, we just call Dr. Strange. With that being said, Superpowered Pop with DT and EB, Dan Tortora and Eric Bunch, here with you, giving you your fix. Your new favorite show, your new favorite podcast is right here. You'll find it on superpoweredpop.com, also superpoweredpop.podbean.com, the downloadable app. You can go to the Podbean app itself for any device, whether you're in the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. Feel free to go in there, download the Podbean app, and search Superpowered Pop with Dan Tortora. You'll find it there, and same name on iTunes as well. So make sure that you tune in every single episode, and we appreciate everybody that's there. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all the same, at Superpowered P POWERED, pop, on each of those. And we look forward to having you connect with us in so many different ways. So with that being said, until the next time, Mr. Eric Bunch, thank you for talking about the Stones with me. And if I know anything right now, I am ready and willing to wield the Infinity Gauntlet if they need anybody to change what Thanos is doing. I'm already going to throw my name in the hat. If we need some Avenger help after they kill off a bunch of these characters, I'm willing to go out there and you know, take one for the team and help out where I can.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how this all plays out, and it's good to know that you're committed to helping save the world, Dan. I'm glad to have you get on the good guy's side there.
Well, you know, as Thor said it, you can be a revenger if you're not an Avenger, so maybe that's me. With all that being said, thanks for listening to Superpowered Pop. For Eric and myself, thank you for listening into the show. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Peace out, everybody.